It is kind of. Chair, we are live.
Good afternoon. Please forgive me. All right. It's 1 o'clock. I'm going to call to order the Health and Social Services Committee meeting for Osage Nation Congress. Today is September 18th. Madam Clerk, will you please do a roll call?
Congresswoman Good Fox?
Present.
Congressman Hamilton? Congressman Maker?
Here.
Congresswoman Redcorn?
Here.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
Here.
Chair Lemon?
Present. Congressman Hamilton will be a few moments late. He did give notice. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Next, we have prayer. Congressman Maker, will you render us an afternoon prayer?
Yes, ma'am. Awa te kumbra. Tati wa kantan kote pi majali te tsinikse. Wajaji ni kasi la kele wala pi kumbra. Nuni kasi zinkaja paski la kele wala pi kumbra hu heka pi ingse. Almighty God, Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for this day and thank you for all your guidance and wisdom that you've given us. All our people here today are here to take care of the health of our people. So we want you to give them the wisdom and knowledge and the courage to do the things they need to do to go forward in the future for taking care of our people. And Lord, we want to ask you to look after those that are struggling or having a hard time and just take care of their needs and give them comfort. Those that may be grieving and just all of our needs, Lord, you know our needs, and we ask you again to take care of those. We give you all the praise and glory, and we ask you to keep the sickness away from our people, Lord. So we ask you all these things in Christ's name. Amen.
Thank you, Congressman Maker. Next on our agenda is number 4, which is approval of minutes.
Chair.
Congresswoman Redcorn.
Motion to approve the minutes dated September 13th, 2024.
Second.
A motion with a second to approve the minutes. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say yes. Yes. Any opposed?
Yes.
Hearing no opposed, the motion carries and the minutes have been approved for September 13th. Thank you, committee. Number 5 on our agenda is consideration of appointees, Michael Bristow, Haley Kramer, Timothy Shadlow. Congresswoman Good Fox.
If the committee is okay, I'm going to make this in the form of one motion.
send, hold on just a second, sorry, to report to Congress that Michael Bristow, Haley Kramer, and Timothy Shadlow are all candidates that are qualified by education and experience, and there are no ethical or legal barriers to service.
A motion with a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
The motion carries. Thank you, committee. We will report to Congress Mr. Bristow, Ms. Kramer, and Mr. Shadlow for confirmation. Thank you. All right, committee, next on our agenda, I'd like to also just real quick note that we have many, many members from our health system here with us today in person, and I think mostly everybody's here in person. All right, great. Number six on our agenda is an executive session. However, if the committee would be okay without objection, we don't have to have everything in executive session concerning the annual plan. And I visited briefly with Ms. Shangru and Mr. Rogers concerning opening with some remarks and then going through the annual plan where we don't, and in the open, where we're not, so that we don't have, so we can have the conversation and any questions answered about the annual plan that can be done in an open forum, and then go into executive session to discuss the counseling center situation. So without objection, I would like to allow Chair Shangru and then Mr. Rogers to address us concerning their annual plan in open for now. And they're gonna let us know when we get to the point where we need to convert to executive session. So Ms. Shangru, would you like to start off with us? Thank you, committee.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Speaker Shaw, Chair Lemon, Congress. Thank you. We are very, very happy to be here today to present to you our annual plan for fiscal year 25. As we can see up and down Main Street, the growth that our health system has undertaken in the last year, and plans, we have a lot of things going on right now with our wonderful administrative staff and their vision. We're moving through several projects, including completion of the clinic, completion of, a beginning and completion of assisted living in Hominy, at the beginning of a satellite clinic in Skytook. And in addition to rolling out our mobile medical units and expanding our specialty services. Mr. Mark Rogers, our CEO, is here to give the main presentation on our plan for the next year. Then we'll be followed by James Brazel, our CFO, to go over our budgets. Also here with us are Anthony Shackelford with prevention, Amy Dobbins with the Title VI, Megan Mays with our grants program. We have Wyatt Sanders, he's our accountant. Marcy Barton is our DON, Director of Nursing. Kirk Shaw, our Chief Operating Officer. Alyssa Campbell, who is our legislative legal counsel, and also Commander Brooke Wallace, thank you, who runs our PRT and Counseling Center. So right now I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Mark Rogers to give you our new plan for fiscal year 25. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hawe, Dahe, it's an honor and privilege to be able to speak to you, congressional officials, today to present our plan. If you'll bring up the slides, it'll take us through our plan pretty quick. It's an executive overview. Our agenda today, I'll go over our annual plan and do our strategic plan overview that we do in August of each year. If go ahead, next slide, please. and then transition to our CFO, Mr. Brazel. Next slide. We do have, as Chairwoman Shangru spoke to, nine major projects. We have the new clinic, the counseling center campus, assisted living, mobile medical unit, Skytook expansion clinic, pro staff, student residency quarters, new network, electronic health record, Epic system, as well as a major revenue cycle overhaul in our program. And then we'll also go over some highlights and accomplishments of our annual plan. Next slide. Just recapping our vision is we envision a strong, culturally sensitive health system that will transform the health of the communities we serve. Our mission, let it be known that the Osage leaders are changing the way people are cared for and are committed to advancing health and wellness to serve the public. Values, accountability, respect, empathy, listening, quality, professionalism, integrity, and teamwork are important to accomplishing our vision and mission. And our overarching goals, develop a comprehensive health system, provide the highest quality of care and services to the people we serve, promote healthy communities through wellness initiatives and partnerships. Our customer service, code word, call to duty, is our five fundamentals to our program, and they are Osage. Observe patients or clients arriving, anticipate the needs and what we need to do to take care of them. Say a greeting in Osage if you're comfortable, because we also are responsible for promoting the language and culture of the tribe as a health system, whether you're a tribal member or not, or a tribal member of another tribe. A is acknowledge the patient, request services from the organization, and make sure that we're responding to that. G is gratitude for using our health and counseling services. We want to be thankful to our tribal members and their families for using our services. And E is to encourage the patient or clients to return again. So this is something we practice and we cover every month at our town hall meeting and our newcomers presentation. So if you want to be successful in our organization, you have to practice our Osage customer service. Next slide. Strategic goals drive our progress over the next 3 years. We started this in 2022. We had an offsite. We took the tribe strategic plan and then pulled the things that were actionable for health into the health strategic plan and turned them into performance metrics. And so this is our annual scorecard that we'll go over on where we're at meeting these requirements. We must rapidly grow while improving our financial picture, create an organizational-wide atmosphere of teamwork, expand and retain our mix of medical and clinical and support staff, educate our community, sustain our accreditation, that's HHHC and CARF, preserve our workforce in order to achieve our vision. Next slide is our metric scorecard. It's pretty simple. Red is we've not met the goal. Yellow, we met some, but not all, but we are progressing. And green is substantially met. Next slide. This is our overview of where we're at with our meeting our strategic goals. And so you can kind of see their color coding. That was reviewed by the board at the August board meeting this past month. Next slide. The first and the biggest project that we have before us right now is our new health clinic. Construction is projected to be completed in summer of 25. Weekly meetings and involvement by leadership team and contractors and tribal development to continue to stay on top of issues and keep our timeline moving. In request for proposal for Osage artists, we'll be going out soon that you'll see that in the area newspaper, the Osage News, as well as on social media, requesting through our art consultants to capture Osage culture and history prominently to be displayed in our new clinic. So you'll, if you know of any artists or anybody would like to submit their portfolio for it to be reviewed and integrated into our facility, please let them know. Next slide. And you can see our health system has taken shape as you drive by. This is the rendering. And so we're getting close to bringing that to reality. Next, our new specialty clinic. So far, we now have, as of this month, the following specialties on staff with the Osage Nation Health System. It's cardiology, we have dermatology, orthopedic and sports medicine, neurology, podiatry, who also is a surgical podiatrist, nephrology, endocrinology, and then in January, we'll have gynecology and urology on staff. So we continue to expand and open services up for to service our people. Next slide. Health grants update. We have a very robust grants program in health. Some of these transitioned over from the tribe. Some of these are brand new. And we'll just kind of just go over briefly the list that we have here. You can see we have numerous grants that we reach out, anything from nutrition, family violence, domestic violence, victim services, suicide prevention, opioid intervention. Next slide continued. We have a total of 21 total grants that equal about $14 million. And Mr. Brazel on his budget part on the CFO side, Ms. Megan Mays have detail we can get into. This is just an overview. It'll end here in a moment. The IHS Small Inventory Grant and Native Connections, Public Health Resilience, Money Follows the Person, Tribal Initiative, or what they call now Pathways, a Community Health Aid Program, or some of the programs that are really starting to reach out and will be touching people. The Small Inventory Grant is the IHS grant that's going to allow us to fund the full construction of our expansion clinic in Skiatook. Next slide. Moving on to number two of our projects. The Counseling Center has some great news to share with you today. As I was just notified late yesterday, the Fire Marshal completed his review and received a report yesterday evening about 5:30 from the contractor from Builder Unlimited. And the Fire Marshal is issuing us a temporary certificate of occupancy, and we should be picking the keys up this afternoon. So there were some minor things that had to be fixed. I'll just give you an example of one. The the exit light, which is supposed to stay on, was wired into the on and off switch, and they've just got to move the wire over so it stays on when they close a facility or whatever. So there was a bunch of minor things. They gave us 30 days. The contractor thinks they can have it finished within just a week to 10 days. So I'm super excited about that. And they were all truly just minor things. We'll be moving staff in over the next 2 weeks, beginning today. And the patient and client wait list will begin admitting soon. So things are finally moving and picking up, and we're super excited about that. Next slide. This is a drone aerial view of all the completed facilities. So instead of the renderings that we showed last year, these are actual the facilities completed. And then also a group picture from our ribbon cutting. So again, exciting time for the community. Moving on to the assisted living facility update. I know there was some discussion here previously, I think it was last week, regarding where we're at with that. There are elder care services. Staff are taking care of elders now. That's the Pathways grant. And they have activities, and they're taking people that have special needs for anything from social services to special medical issues. They're running people back and forth for extended appointments or things like with the VA. We have some of our tribal members that are VA, and their issues take maybe half a day to work. So our staff are really troubleshooting a lot of really heavy issues for some of our elders, as well as just sitting and visiting with some of our elders that are lonely. And we had them on a visit schedule. So super excited where our elder care program's going with our grant. Our director of our elder care services, Mr. James, unfortunately was out sick today, so he couldn't be here. Assisted living project change from a request for proposal by the health system to tribal development project in the spring of this year. Greenhouse is no longer a viable option due to the costs and timing of ARPA burn down window. ARPA appropriation burn down started on project, working with Secretary of Development and Builders Unlimited, Blue River, and One Architects on the final plans that I have here to show you for options one, options two, and options three. We are going to recommend option three, an eight-bed facility, as it's closer to the current approved appropriations and most viable pathway to get capability started for the tribe as identified in tribal community needs assessment and the tribal strategic plan. Yes, ma'am.
I wasn't here for that presentation. I was out of state. There are folks still here looking to find the other money that you need to go with the option that you guys presented.
Yes, ma'am.
And so I just want you all to keep that in mind, that we are keeping that in mind, that we hope to be able to find the dollars to appropriate that. It may not happen, or it could happen really late in session.
Yes, ma'am.
I see here, you know, I did see that you said, well, we're just going to go with the eight bed, but it's just remember that that could definitely change, hopefully.
Yes, ma'am. And this wasn't pressing you, Congress, for any decision today. We just wanted to give you guys options and let you know that we're looking at, you know, kind of a plan A, B, and C, and we'll need your help and discussion and collaboration on where we end up on that discussion. And these were just received from the architect. This is hot off the press, these three options. And there was a separate package. These are just extracts. There was actually a separate package with a pro forma sent over earlier today for Congress to view and discuss at your leisure, and let us know what your thoughts are.
Just for your information, we do have another meeting Friday if we needed to go there, and this coming Monday the 23rd, so we still have some time.
Yes, ma'am.
Just to let you know, so it gives us time to have a chance to look at this and talk amongst ourselves, and if we need to have a meeting for it, we can. I can get it on the agenda.
Yes, ma'am. Sounds perfect. Thank you so much. The original 32-bed option one, just as a refresher, we didn't know it was going to come in so high. Reason 32 beds was looked at, as you can see this layout here, is we were trying to do an we were trying to build a facility within the budget that would self-sustain or at least come close to breaking even as possible. So that's where the 32 bed came from, because of the aquatics therapy and the skilled nursing and all the things that we could do in a larger facility to help it be as close to self-sufficient as possible. So that's option one. But however, that came in at a projected cost of $27 million. Next slide is option two for a 24-bed, and it came in at 17.8. But then that takes us down, continues to degrade our ability to get close to that break-even. And so we're at a pure deficit on option two and option three. And option three next is the eight-bed that comes in at actually $8.1 million. But with the infrastructure and some of the other requirements, you'll see that in the pro forma and the other information I sent over earlier today, comes out to $9.5 million. Apparently, water pressure is a little bit on the low side for the senior housing. If you build option one, two, or three, it will take the water pressure down for our senior housing. So there needs to be a larger water pump system. And so that's drove up our costs and all three options on this to build a larger pump. And if there might be a way we can share that more, possibly split that cost with the tribe or get some assistance from Congress, that would also bring that back from 9.5 in this particular case down to 8.1. Next slide. Super excited about our mobile medical units. I've been talking about this for a while. We've really cut our teeth on the Barnstall tornado. We had a lot of volunteers. We continue to be 100% operational. We are also beginning staff rotations with the clinic. So our clinical staff are all getting opportunities to work on the mobile medical unit. And so that does two things. It gives people a little break from being in the clinic, and also builds that capability where we have a larger pool and more depth on the bench should we get into another natural disaster situation like Barnstall. So it'd be easier to set rotations with people who've had orientation and training on the mobile medical unit's equipment and procedures and policies. So that's working out really well. And we have a very active schedule. We are seeing patients each time that they go out. Some days are a little bit heavier than others, just like in the clinic. The Mobile Health Care Association, we continue to be a member, as well as being a Medicare provider. We do have Medicare certification, and we're also part of the Native American Mobile Health Coalition. Huge success, again, responding to Barnstall. Our team was lauded by FEMA, the Tribal Emergency Management and Police, and the elders in the community, as well as the community in general for the services provided during the recovery operations. We do not have a response capability. We're a health and wellness center. However, Tribal Emergency Management and the Oklahoma State Emergency and FEMA asked us, knowing we had this capability, to come out. So we were actually on scene with counseling and health and wellness services within hours after the second event. And we stayed for several days, left, and were asked to come back and stayed for a couple more weeks until basically there wasn't anybody coming for any care services. And then we broke down and retrograded back into our services and our stops. They also recently provided sports physicals for the area schools. I think they did it with Hominy, Fairfax, and Pawhuska. We continue to try to reach out and find opportunities to stay engaged with the community with our mobile medical program. Next slide. This is our certificate of membership. This goes out, you've probably seen this on social media. This is the August and September schedule. Next week we'll be sending out the October schedule. And again, just really proud of the staff and the work that they're doing with the mobile medical unit. And then next slide is just a quick update on our other projects. We're waiting on the SAP grant funding. It's been transitioned, and then the next thing we'll do is do an RFP to begin construction to build that expansion clinic. The 8-unit pro staff residency quarters, we have a grant from IHS, and once we receive those funds, I think we're anticipating toward the end of the year that we'll be able to build temporary housing to support OU and OSU doctors and counselors and residents to be able to come and stay and work in our facilities and be able to start a permanent rotation with pharmacists, doctors, our counselors, social workers, whatnot. So we're super excited. IHS agreed with us, saw the need, and funded that. Our new IT network has been deployed. We're cut over from the tribal network now. And then next phase, we'll be moving on to our new Epic Health record with partnership with the Creek Nation. And we'll be replacing our IHS RPMS electronic health record. IHS overall is doing away with their system. If we stay where we're at, we're probably looking anywhere from 5 to 7 years before they would come in and retrograde our RPMS system, and that's just too long. The last few major hacks that have come in that have affected IHS have impacted those that were still in RPMS. Our revenue cycle overhaul, we continue to make major progress with our partners from Face Rock that have come in and helped do in revenue cycle reviews. We do now have the 340B pharmacy program. That's saving us around $120,000 a month. So, you know, over the year, at the end of the year, that's going to be over $1 million just from doing things smarter, better, faster, stronger. And also the space cost package for the 105L lease program has been updated. We'll have additional pickups from that. Also working on finishing our fee schedules. And we've increased our contracts with area payers. A lot of our insurers in our area that we have not been historically contracted with, we are now contracted with, and continue to do improvements in billing and coding for our services and charges, getting paid appropriately and properly for the services we are providing. Next slide. Some exciting highlights. As of August last month, we hit new record revenues, and we continue year over year to show that. Super excited about that. A lot of that is just because of doing things better, faster, stronger. Over 90 employee awards have been given from 2022 to date, so we are recognizing and continue to recognize and award our employees and recognize them monthly at a town hall meeting when we do our monthly training and our updates on our health system. We just upgraded the lab to a moderate complexity lab and had a really good review for our licensure, so we are out now, can actually do more tests as a moderate complexity lab. This is the first time that I can see that our health system's ever had that. This is the highest level of licensure this health system's had that I can see historically. Zero discrepancies on our no-notice FDA inspection. Sustained high patient satisfaction scores. As we talked earlier, growing new specialty clinic and stabilized professional staff. Also work staff and our support staff for stabilizing. OSU and OU partnerships. We're on our third student rotation with OSU Medical School. And we've had such great feedback. They're wanting to see about sending more students here. So they're looking at trying to establish a Cherokee level kind of relationship with us, with their students. So that's so super exciting. Dr. Little's handling that. He's been he's still an adjunct professor at the DO school with OSU. And he's also been an instructor and preceptor and mentor over the years. And OU recently reached out to us about working with us with some of our medical and behavioral health and some partnerships. We also continue to work with Tri-County VOTEC on other training opportunities between the health and counseling center and the VOTEC. We do continue to see our patients returning, and we're focusing on sustaining and rebuilding that trust relationship that seems to have been broken for years. Trying to bring that back and keep it. Growing outreach activities and continue to have additional grants awarded. And one of the neat things here just a few weeks ago, I was contacted by Newsweek, and based on our data from Medicare, the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority, and some really complex matrix that they go through on Google Business Reviews, that we're one of the top programs in the United States recognized by Newsweek for counseling services. So more to come on that. Next slide. We continue. We are involved in the community. This is Day of Champions. This was our second year of doing that. These were actual college coaches from across the United States that came in and did anti-bullying, some self-esteem, and some fitness and nutrition training with our staff. So we had a really big turnout this year. Next year is going to be even bigger. Will be our third year next year. Coach Heupel and his staff were just wonderful. You can also see down here some of the care packages the employees pulled together and put in the bag for Barnstall. Not only did we provide some donated items, a lot of the employees came in and bought water and different staples to help out, and our Title VI really stepped up and helped our folks out as well. Next slide. So far, our transition today, we're about 95% rough order of magnitude transitioned from the tribe in accordance with Osage Nation law, media, public relations, IT, legal, finance, accounts payable, facilities, procurement, shipping, receiving, HR, payroll, grants are all now transitioned. Vehicle fleet insurance and transition had been delayed but started, and we still have limited memorandum agreement still needed. IDC budget formulation and positions transitions, transition being finalized, and that budget going forward. Self-governance support reduced but remains in place. We'll always have a need for a level of self-governance support for government-to-government activities for the health system. And a huge success and extraordinary effort by both the tribe and health, with incredible support from the Osage Executive Office, Osage Congress, and the Health Board on helping us get to that 95% transition. It's been an effort. That concludes my overview of our annual plan and kind of where we've been, some of the program highlights. Next, I'd like to ask Chief Financial Officer James Brazel to come forward and cover the budget and the financials. Did we want to go in executive session for that part, ma'am?
So I wanted to give the committee, Mr. Rogers, an opportunity to ask any questions based off of your presentation.
Yes, ma'am.
Because I do have a few myself, but I want the committee and any other members of Congress that has any, and then whoever from your staff would need to answer that.
Yes, ma'am.
So I want to open the floor up to anyone who has any questions or comments concerning Mr. Rogers' presentation. Congresswoman Goodfox.
So are these the final, realizing that everything is subject to a little bit of change in a plan, but I don't recall the bed space or numbers that was presented today being the same as what was presented last week when we were talking about assisted living. And I'm not the only Congress member that has noticed that. There's like option two last week for y'all was, this is gonna be, we're not gonna have to come to you guys for any additional money. This is gonna be self-sustaining. And immediately there were members who were like, well, we might be able to make that happen because this is a priority for a lot of members, because we see the need there with the people that we, you know, interact with through the community. And so I'm a little confused by last week's numbers and then this week's numbers.
Yes, ma'am. Last week when that presentation, there was a lot of moving parts, and so that was our best snapshot that we knew. So what happened is we went back, we went and worked on our pro forma, updating that, doing our cost modeling. And so what our hope was is that option two would be able to come in and still be closer to being self-sufficient as far as billing and services, because we'd still be that little bit larger. However, it looks more like option three would be, and we have always said from the beginning, we had no seed money, we just had construction money.
Yeah.
So we were always going to need some level of help, but to lock that down, we have to lock the bed size down. So when we were looking at what we could bill for, so we wouldn't have to ask for as much support, that's where the option one came in, because that's how big we'd have to be and stay full for us to be able to generate revenue for the least amount of support. And so this is, we did not get all the information presented to you guys today till after that meeting last week from the, I know it was dated the 12th, but we didn't get it, analyze and sit down with it until after they met last week. So I apologize, but this is a fast moving, with all the recent developments that has come with that.
Okay, and understood, follow up. Okay, I understand that. In phase, so the third, I don't know how everyone is kind of referring to one, two, three. One being the most awesome senior living or assisted living versus the medium, and then C being the lowest, or three. But is there the potential to build on upon if we end up going with the third option of, we see this becoming bigger, and I will say as one member, I don't have a problem putting money into it. I'll appropriate that money and vote yes for it every single session that I'm sitting in this seat, because I see it as a need, and I see it as, it'd be awesome if you guys could be self-sustaining, but if you're not, for this, I'm okay with giving you money. I mean, I will be a yes vote for that all day long, because it's providing a service to our people where we don't have that specific service within our boundary. And so I'm just one vote, and that's just how I feel about it. So I always envisioned it, right? I envisioned it small, because we're venturing out into a place we have not been before. But I also understood from the financial aspect, what your all's expectations were of yourself, that number one, like, we need to make money, and two, but we also take care of people. So I was okay with you all like looking outside the box and saying, well, hey, but if we do this, you know, and because I don't know what the need is. We know that there is a need.
Yes.
But we don't know how big the need is. And that is really hard to make final decision. Like, I get it. It's hard to make final decisions when you know there's a need, but you really just don't know how big it is. That's why I envisioned, like, I don't know, maybe serve. I can think of four people right now, just off the top of my head, that I know are in assisted living in other counties. and their family is struggling to go to work, pick kids up, get them to sporting events, and then go all the way over to, you know, Owosso to spend any amount of time with their loved one. And so I don't know how anyone else feels, but I mean, if you all went with the C and we had to put money into it, I'd support it, knowing that I think eventually your all's long-term goals are to expand and make it something that, because listen, I don't doubt for one single minute that there are non-natives that have loved ones outside of Osage County that wouldn't say, hey, that's a nice brand new facility, and they have skilled workers there. And so instead of spending that money in Bartlesville, it just makes more sense to put them, you know, utilize what we have within the boundary. But yeah, that was my question. Basically, was last week's versus this week's were way different, and I needed clarification. Thank you.
You're welcome, ma'am. And very good questions. I want to emphasize that. In my understanding, where we're at with option three, it's scalable. So we had asked them that, you know, if we do have to go with option three, we want to be able to expand it and build it out, you know, kind of as what they call scalable, where it's easy to. And so if you look at the options, you'll see the layout and the grounds all look the same. So they do have that plan for that extension for it to be built out. And we're also trying to help ourselves solve this problem by putting in for a small ambulatory grant program and a joint venture. So Mr. James and Ms. Mays and Mr. Brazel and Mr. Shaw have been working on that as well. So we're trying to find other options, not just come in and ask you guys for money and dump stuff on you guys. So, but this is, to your point, ma'am, this is has been asked by the people. It was in the community needs assessment that was done in years and years ago, and it is in the tribe strategic plan, and you guys had allocated this project to us to bring solutions and try to bring into reality, and that's what we're trying to do here. And not to bury a lot of information, but there is a lot of choices, and we do need some help. We are trying to push hard to make this a reality, and I think the option three that's scalable is probably our best option. Gives us time to actually start taking care of people. I know Mr. James is already, I don't want to say he has a waiting list, but he has people that are calling him weekly asking, hey, when do you guys think it'll be open? I want to bring, you know, grandpa, I need to bring my mom, that kind of stuff. So
I'll get just one moment. I want to piggyback off of Alice also. So like I said, I wasn't here for that discussion. However, when you talk about scalable, I need to back up a second. You mentioned the ambulatory. You might explain to them what that means, because that we know what that means in the healthcare field.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, you might, to help understand what you were talking about in relation to the assisted living and ambulatory.
Ambulatory basically is where you can still get around and do self-care and do what they call activities of daily living with some sort of assistance, you know, like a walker or a cane or whatever. And that you do have some medical and physical issues, like me. I'm 100% disabled veteran. I have a handicap placard because a lot of times I can't walk all the way across the parking lot at Walmart, but I can still fight if I had to. And
it's a lower level of acuity of care.
Yes,
when
yes.
You have ambulatory individuals in there, and as opposed to when you have acute skilled or rehabilitation skilled nursing, which is a different billing structure that you would do.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. And different licensure requirements. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
For that level of care.
So my question was basically exactly what Congresswoman Goodfox's was, except that I wasn't here for the presentation, and I wanted to know exactly that. A lot of times I've asked that question about other projects that we've done, not with just health, but like, why do we have to build the biggest thing? Why can't it be something that we add on to and know that that's a commitment that we are going to make? I want to do it with water that way. I want to do water that way, knowing that we need to continue to put the monies into the fight for our water at some point in time. You know, we'll never stop doing something like that. And I would like for us to get to that point. So I'd like to know that you would like the third option or the first option, however you want, the $27 million option, let's just call it that. That'll be a lot easier. That would be the ideal option for you to say to be sustainable within 1 year. But in looking at, I want you guys to consider looking at a scalability, getting some assistance. That's what we're here for as a nation. And look, and not putting that much pressure on y'all, because you guys got a lot of things going on. And consider a scalability where you may not be sustainable for 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years. You know, I mean, theoretically, it's usually 7 to 10.
Yes,
so, I mean, and I'm not saying that's what we want to do, but I think we could probably meet somewhere in the middle and continue to have some discussions concerning that.
Very good points. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Congresswoman Redcorn.
Thank you, Chair. And I don't disagree with my colleagues, and I've enjoyed the conversations that we've been having in this, and it may be more of a question that Mr. Brazel can answer in a little bit too. I'm still thinking my ARPA brain, ARPA dollars brain, and I do want to hear still the differences that we can accomplish between options 2 and option 3 and what that looks like if we do go ahead and scale up to option 2 at the time that we have the cash to be able to do so. If we were able to find the cash, if we're able to scale to option 2, obviously it's not, you know, what we've heard right this second is that it's not as self-sustaining as quickly as option 1 would be. But I think, I guess my wonder and question is, does the same truth hold with option 2 as it did last week, that it would be self-sustaining faster than?
I was out with COVID last week, and I apologize, and I did debrief with my folks. So I did not understand from my discussions with them what you guys took away from that, and so I apologize. There's elements of facts in that from what we've talked about. We want this to happen. We know it's a need because we're out there with the community and the people every day. We also know that this is put in black and white in the tribal strategic plan. It's also in our strategic plan. So I've got a lot of highly motivated people that are just trying to make good things happen and trying to complete things to meet expectations of the tribe and Congress and the executive branch. So I don't want to say anybody misspoke, but when we went back after that meeting, we had things we didn't have when we spoke to you guys. We actually received all these plans I just shared with you guys. We've only had them for a few days. My board's not even looked at them yet. And so that drove some different discussion requirements in preparation of talking to you today that we did not have last week.
That's fair. And Chair, may I follow up? I'm certain of that. I'm not worried about that part for you. I think my head is going to, and I'm just talking out loud. If we're talking about being able to scale up from option 3 in the future, my head tells me that scaling up every time we do so will be more expensive then than it is now. Every scaling option is more expensive. So then the other component of that is, and I'm okay with you all needing funds for operations for a couple of years too. However, I'm looking at it thinking, okay, option 3 needs $9.5 million at the moment, which is still in need of extra funds, totally fine. But if it meant that you needed $3 million every year, I'm just throwing out rough numbers.
Yes,
I'm just talking. I don't know that that actually is what it costs. But like, let's say that it means you need $3 million in funds to operate with that option because of the size and your billing options. Okay, so then Congress is going to have to commit to and know that that's what it's going to need. However, if we were to invest to option 2, the $17.8 million, if we were to get to that point and you only needed $1 million in operating funds, I feel like it's a worthy conversation for Congress to have to say, right now, when it's cheaper, do we build in the middle? And then you would need less funds from us. Because the argument stands that if for 3 years you need $3 million to operate, we've invested another $9 million in it. Why don't we just invest the $9 million right now? And then you only need $1 million to operate. And then if you need to expand on that to get to a point where self-sustaining, it's a different conversation to go from level 3 or option three to option one as far as cost is concerned in 5 or 6 years. So that's where I just want to still have those conversations to see where you're sustainable at in those other levels.
I completely agree with your statement. Option three will be where we need the most support, but it should be less cost versus option three, where we have a larger operation. So it's an economy of scale kind of conversation. I think in the middle is somewhere we can meet. Now, what I did not bring up, and I need to put it on the table in transparency, and I've not been cleared by my board to do this, but I know that their nature, and we're about full disclosure and transparency about everything. As our health program, that's where, pardon the phrase, but as we grow the honey pot, that's where the money's at. As we take care of non-natives and we start really become players in the community, when I start opening 7 days a week, and weekends and holidays, and we start really cash flowing, we have epic medical record, and you have your chart on your phone, and we'll be coming to the modern era that we're rapidly fighting hard to get to, then our money position, when we did these things at the Absentee Shawnee Tribe, we had more money than Christ had disciples. So that's just a fact. And so I want to do that here for you guys. I lost my stepfather this year. I'm moving my mother and my grandkids, my whole family up here. And I'm not moving up here because we like to hang out at Blue Stem Lake. I'm moving up here because, this is where we're going to retire. And I'm Cherokee. We're going to live in Washington County because there's, things that I get from my tribe that I have to be in the service area. And I'm committed to this, like the old, rancher, the old farmer saying, who's committed more to breakfast, the chicken or the hog? It's the hog because he gives the ham, the pork and everything, the egg, just chicken lays an egg and hops down the road. I'm a hog for you guys. So anyway, I'm sorry I got off track.
No, I love it. That's totally fine. I just wanted to say that I still want to entertain the conversation further. This is not necessarily where we're going to have this whole conversation over assisted living, but
It helps us, madam, for me to go back, and we can actually go on and update our pro forma around that conversation. It is very helpful.
All right, great. So I'm glad we had this conversation. You did, Congresswoman Redcorn mentioned that we need to touch on it a little bit here today, last week when I was visiting with her. And so does anybody else from the committee or Congress have any questions or comments concerning this particular topic that we're on? Because I do have a few other questions concerning your presentation. Okay, great. I'm happy to hear that we've got folks that are willing to come to the table and discuss it and look at it, that this is something that's, I feel it's something that's in our future, and that's exciting. All right. So you mentioned the specialty clinics, which congratulations.
Yes, ma'am.
On. We've never had that and those opportunities here within our reach. And will any of the service specialty people be going on mobile unit type thing?
Going back to that scalable, mm-hmm. Where it makes sense and where we can get a return on that, or at least we can get a grouping of people where it makes sense for what we have. But yes, we will eventually be scaling or moving up to that as we get our program and services. Right now we're crawling, and we're going to be walking, then we're going to be running.
Okay. What other specialty clinics are you looking at to add that you don't already have in your plan?
Right now, this is going to kind of round us out, and we're going to have to get really good at what we're doing now. There's things that we've talked about. There's a lot of people that come to me and say, well, why don't you guys do dialysis center, things like that. And those are very complex conversations because they involve licensure and CMS. You can go out and do anything. If the tribe wanted to fund a dialysis center, we can go build one tomorrow, but we're not going to build Medicare for it because Medicare has to give you a certificate of operation to be able to do that. And they have excess capability in the Bartlesville area, and we are in that area. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, that's a great conversation to have with someone. Someone asked me, why aren't we doing dialysis?
Yes, ma'am.
And it's based off of a service area needs assessment and what you have around you, which you have, you did have dialysis in Ponca City too, is it still? Oh, really? Anyways, we know we have it in Bartlesville, which for Pahuska that works, but on the west side, it may not work. So you could have an argument there, Mr. Rogers.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the PRT and the adolescent unit. I know that there's some obstacles there, and I've been fielding some questions, so I'd like to be able to answer their questions.
Yes, ma'am.
Right from the horse's mouth.
Yes, ma'am. So the adolescent, from a regulatory requirement, there were some things that come with operating an adolescent facility that was not known when this was built. For example, it has to be completely fenced off from the other areas. That's one issue. So that was not built into the plan. We're going to have to go back and find funds and build a fence. And then I just think it's just a physical barrier that has cameras that can be monitored.
And like a prison looking.
No. Exactly. And it has to be a ability where, people can't go out and just, climb over it and all that. And you have to have cameras and things. And so the employees that work in that adolescent facility can't work in the other facilities. They are dedicated. So there was a lot of things that not are insurmountable but we're going to not be able to open that until we get those things addressed. And we have a consultant that used to be one of the part of the leadership on the Oklahoma Department of Mental Health Substance Abuse Services, Dr. Hernandez.
Yes, I met her.
And she's working with us, so she's given us those requirements, and we've shared them. We're costing them out to be able to address these things.
Okay, great. I just want to offer one little possible idea.
Yes, ma'am.
Consider a natural fence, possibly, for the aesthetics that are there, instead of something possibly metal. Or, wood, of course, is natural, but there's all kinds of barriers that are out there that are aesthetically pleasing that blocks a line of sight. I mean, I know that people might poo-poo this, but bamboo is something that grows really fast. It's extremely hardy. It blocks a line of sight, and it's fairly cost-effective. It's just an idea to think for the aesthetics.
We actually originally, when I just got here in July of 2022, started sitting in on the PRTC campus meetings. They had natural barriers all planned in, and they were all taken out because of costs.
Okay, I do remember that now. Okay, then I have, I noticed in your annual plan, you're saying the compact needs updating. So what are we looking at?
That's correct. For the Federal Tort Claims Limit Act right now, that's written on where we were 5 years ago. 5 years ago is not today. So we will be needing to go in and start with some ad hoc requirements to start. For example, we'll need the new clinic to be covered, identified in there. So those are some of the type of things. And then we need to go back and look at the staffing package to make sure that our staffing package is updated for what the services, the sanctioned services that we are providing now. So we're looking at probably 18 months, but okay. 12 to 18 months. But I just, again, be transparent. I want to let everyone know now that we are going to have to do that. I don't want to come in here 18 months and go, we need to do this, now.
Okay. You just keep us up to date on that.
Roger that. And we'll be working with Ms. Thomas and self-governance. And we've already, in the area office is also aware of that we have that need and what we're looking at.
Good thing.
Yes, ma'am. It is a good problem to have. Yes, ma'am.
It very is a good problem. So will obstetric specialty clinic and dermatology ever come to Osage County?
Say that one more time.
Obstetrics. Would you ever consider obstetrics in Osage County? The reason I'm saying that is because I don't believe there's an actual obstetrics doctor practicing in our jurisdictional boundaries.
Yes, ma'am. I know Dr. Little is... So there's a saying about thinking outside the box. Sometimes Dr. Little, he builds a box, gets inside of it, and then gets outside of it, and then tries to figure a better way to build a better box and stuff. So and I mean that in a very good way. He's wonderful. He's been practicing medicine for 40 years. So yes, ma'am, we are talking and looking at that. But we have to get certain things here, like I've got to get my, you know, lab moderate complexity. We got to get more space. So a lot of this is kind of, once you start doing this, it starts building and it makes it easier to bring people in. You know, right now, just strength of personality and kind of a wink and a nod and a promise that things are going to be amazing and we're growing. And we've brought all these specialists in, but they're still in a, you know, 50-year-old building and it's not very impressive and stuff. And but they see the building being built and we tell them about all the great things that we're going to be doing. And so a lot of those are just strength of relationship type things. But once that's actually in place and it's operating, I like to see a stronger relationship with the hospital. It makes it difficult, and I've had these discussions with the hospital leadership just in passing that, you know, being for profit and then the kind of organization we are makes it difficult to work together on a lot of large scale things. And but I would like to see us be able to, even if we had to do some outside the box kind of create some kind of in between entity that protects both organizations where we can do some collaborative things together. It's very valuable. The hospital it's better for the hospital to work with us than it is for us to work for them from a money standpoint. It's a money pit for us. For them, it's a huge increase. For example, if we were the hospital board and the tribe wanted to come in partnership, I would jump on that in a second, because basically every patient, once a partnership is in place, that's Medicaid that comes in, they get the basic Medicaid rate, but once they have a tribal partnership, they get the enhanced rate. And so that saves the hospital overnight and makes it financially viable on an annual basis. But we would have to have, and I would encourage it, you know, any kind of relationship like that, we have to have majority control or have majority oversight. I know the IHS area office has said ever since they've taken the Pawnee Service Unit Hospital offline, that it's really, they have seen that they really wish they had kept a hospital here. And so they've talked to us about needing a hospital in this area, and they think that our location would be a good location for that, among a few other locations. So, you know, those are just things that I've been approached with that, you know, just like Sky took a reason they want an expansion clinic. They've been trying to get the Cherokees and other tribes to come in there and do something in that area, you know, and no one's been able to do it. And they've got growing needs in that area. And that's why our grant was funded it was the number one funded grant that cycle for out of 50 applicants. It was not only was ours approved, it was number one on the list because IHS sees that need in that area.
So the hospital, I remember the Pawnee Hospital. Some of us were born there.
Oh, wow. Wow.
That's right. There you go. It was a sad day. Yeah. It was a sad day when that closed, and my grandfather had a lot to do with Pawnee Benefit Package after that happened and everything, and of course he's gone now. But I mean, we've all have ties there. Our Aunt Kikabi was a nurse there and worked there until she left us. But anyways, we were fortunate to have a hospital even in Fairfax. Mm-hmm. And I know that it barely, you know, it's not something, and they've expanded. Mm-hmm. And so that might be another option for you there. And that gets you to the west side a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And because you're going to get a big rub if it's always just Pawhuska.
And that, to your point, ma'am, that might be something we could do. And then potentially, you know, have a dialysis center come in there, be able to get CMS sanctioning for that.
That's a lot easier to get.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
Than a standalone. Okay, I have one more question for him. I'm sorry, I'm just very curious, and so if the committee will indulge me. You mentioned something that really piqued my interest and I'm excited to hear about, and I know that's how you're going to generate your revenue, you know, to fill up the Pooh Bear's honey pot, right?
Yes, ma'am.
You said non-natives.
Yes, ma'am.
So what are you thinking on? What's your ideas on thinking about how you're going to roll it out? Because I've had people come to me and be like, why don't you just offer mammograms to non-natives first, since you have one of the top mammogram machines, and see how that goes?
Well, first and foremost, that anybody we take care of that's non-native will have to have insurance. And so so we know that there will be that's part of the requirements for any non-natives to use any ITU services. They will have to have insurance. We already got the legal structure in place before I got here to provide this, but we're not ready to do it yet because we don't have the capacity. We're growing, and we have barely enough capacity. And so I have to put depth on the bench so our Osage people, who are our primary patients, do not see any interruptions in their services. For example, if it takes, you know, 7 to 10 days to get an appointment reasonably, or you can have walk-in, then once we start taking care of non-natives, that doesn't turn into 3 months or, you know, that kind of. So I want to give assurance, and I have things in place. I do not have things in place now, and I won't until we get into the new building. And I can't bring non-natives in here that are used to going and being on Epic and getting their medical chart on their phone. We don't have anything better to provide them than what they're getting now at Pawhuska Hospital.
So that's really important that you said that there's a barrier, in essence, because they have to have insurance.
Correct, yes,
ma'am. Even though you guys are a federally qualified health center, because federally qualified health centers that aren't affiliated with Indian Health Service are able to see non-insured. That's the whole point of federally qualified health centers.
Yeah, we can have a sliding scale, but it'll still require some payment, except for folks that are in a very very small percentage. But even as a tribal entity, we're going to have some kind of like $5 minimum payment or $2 or something like that.
You can do a sliding scale.
That's correct. Yes.
What you meant by that is you can't just see them like you see Native Americans or Indigenous.
Correct.
People. There will have to.
Everybody
some
pays something.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
So the local clinics around here, it used to be $20 for a visit.
Yeah.
$10 for every injection. $10 for a. An X-ray. Of course, I'm sure those prices have definitely gone up.
The accounting requirements and things audit-wise, we will have to be in compliance with. I just didn't want to drag everybody into the deep end of the pool because that gets real complicated and stuff.
I'm just glad we're going to talk about it and that you guys are looking down the road, knowing that that's how you're going to meet your need, really.
Yes, ma'am.
And that could pave the way for assisted living, also possibly, and some more money going in that direction. So,
yes, ma'am.
Okay. Kudos on the community service outreach events. I think that all of our departments, if they have the ability to do that, I think that it's great. It gets people to see the faces outside of the clinic, and it gives a relationship that's not just, oh, I'm going to the doctor, and you kind of get that anxiety,
yes,
and
ma'am,
fear. So kudos on that, and way to go on getting hypo.
Thank you, ma'am. And we do have a requirement, and we worked with HR that for your annual evaluation, you have to have 2 community events that you come out and work doing a tribal community event to receive top level markings on your evaluation. So that's a requirement. So if you don't do 2 events, then you're automatically marked down on your evaluation. That's from me all the way down to housekeeping and stuff. Everybody's got to serve, because when you're working for a tribe, it's about service to the people.
All right. Committee, do you have anything else for Mr. Rogers? All right. Since this might be an executive session, will it be an executive session, Mr. Brazel? You guys want to take a short break before we roll into that?
Yes.
Okay, we will recess without objection for 10 minutes. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, ma'am.
Sorry for all the drilling. I just.
Oh, that's okay, ma'am.
I like to. People get to hear it, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Brazel does that, or Mr. Bristow does it to me once a month, so.